Network, proudly presents The Jay's Blade Show, with your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as a special guest. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us back from the break in time for segment three. He's absolutely right. I am Jay Flama, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Network, Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best. It's the spiciest. It's the boldest. It's the most amazing hot sauce out there on the market. It's on every table in Deep South, and it should be on yours. When it says JB's, it's the best. All right, so thank you to Tony Deer for coming on the show and previewing the European side of the ledger for the Masters. And now we're going to go back over and look at the American side, and we're also going to talk a lot about the golf course design at Augusta National with one of our fellow TNN contributors. He's got his own podcast with his partner Darren called Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Please give a warm Jay's Place welcome to Mitch Lawrence. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jay. Good to be with you.
Well, it's always glad to have you on as well as all the rest of the GMN guys because you have fantastic insights for us. So let's get right to it. We have to start the conversation on the American side of the ledger with Dustin Johnson. He's the hottest player right now.
Yeah, I would, you know, a lot of people, when it comes time to actually looking who we think might win the Masters every year. It's an interesting discussion, obviously. I feel a real connection to Dustin's chances this year. I'm in the middle of reading Lorne Rubenstein's book on Tiger that just came out. And when you read Tiger's mindset in 1997 about what he had already played in a couple Masters before as an amateur, and when he got there that first year as a pro, his whole mindset was incredibly similar to where we find Dustin Johnson and a number of other guys, obviously, as well. But that is that because of their length and their ability to be accurate, which Dustin is right now, it's essentially a par 68 golf course for him. And they're thinking driver, wedge, 9-iron, 8-iron to a lot of the par 4s, even though they've been lengthened over time. It's easy to dismiss somebody who might be the favorite, but in this case this year, my feeling is with everything that he's done and the place he is mentally, which is obviously equally as important when you're going around Augusta, I think it would be hard to pick against Dustin. I really do.
You know, a lot of people said that his bugaboo was short putting, but then he went out and he won at Oaklawn, which is among the most difficult golf courses for greens in the entire world. You know, you don't win at Oaklawn if you're not putting well, especially on the short putt. So it seems as though the one negative knock on his game, that in his wedge game, he overcame in the biggest way at the hardest possible venue. So, you know, what's left? If he tore down the gates at Oakmont, it seems like he could probably do the same thing to Augusta National and turn it into a bomb and gouge battle, maybe down the stretch with, say, a Bubba Watson who can do exactly the same thing and has done it twice in the past.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And the thing about Dustin now is he's in a completely different place than he's been over the last few years. And what he's done in the last year is obviously pretty spectacular. And I think, like I said, the mental part of this is what's really important. And I think he's in an unbelievable place mentally. I think he believes in himself. His whole personality is geared toward being calm under pressure. And that is now starting to really serve him well. And I can't wait to see what he does. I really can't.
He's definitely has got the phlegmatic demeanor down, that's for sure. Okay. You need a shoehorn to get a quote out of him, pretty much. But the one thing that struck me the most about his win at the U.S. Open was he mentioned in his interview that he wasn't looking at scoreboards as he was coming down the stretch. And I found that odd, and I put my hand up and I asked him, I said, well, wait a minute, Dustin. You know, with the possibility of a penalty hanging over you and you don't know if your lead is one shot or two shots or what it might be, why wouldn't it have been more important to look at the boards? And his answer was, because I'm trying to birdie every hole. Because, and that resonated with me. I didn't think of that, that the mindset would be, I don't care, I'm going to go for the jugular. And if I win, I win. If I lose, I lose. That's not usually how you win in the U.S. Open. Normally, you play defensive golf when you're in the lead of the U.S. Open. It's usually the guy who makes the least mistakes, not the guy who goes out and makes the most birdies. So I found that aggressive mindset to be both interesting and kind of against the grain, but it did work for him. And, yeah, you know, it's true. To win at Augusta, you got to go out and make birdies. You can't stand around making pars.
Yeah, and I Mark Carnevale on SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio said a great thing. He said he thinks kind of Dustin's been lulling us all into some false sense of who he is because he's so calm and because he seems not to really get emotionally involved, that we have mistaken that over time to kind of put him in a certain category of he doesn't really care. But he's a killer. He's a cold-blooded guy inside. We just don't see it the way we're used to seeing it. And I think now that he's won, and now that he knows what it feels like to have a U.S. Open and a major and big tournaments, WGC events, I think it's we're kind of getting a real feel for who he is. And I've watched him for a while because I live in Myrtle Beach. He went to Coastal Carolina. I've seen the ups and downs of his life and his career pretty up close. And I know a lot of people who've spent a lot of time with him. And the biggest thing to me is that he took that time off and took care of the personal issues he had to, which has given him a lot of inner strength. And the family and Wayne Gretzky and everything else, it's like a perfect storm put into this athletic, monstrous golf body. And I think when you combine that with the belief that you can win these events and that you have every right to, it's a really awesome combination. Now, like I said at the beginning, there's obviously a ton of guys out there that can win in any given week.
Yeah.
So
I have also watched him play since he was at Coastal Carolina. One of my favorite memories was covering the Hootie one year where both he and Webb Simpson were seniors and playing in that event. And it ended up that Wake Forest beat Baylor that year in three extra holes. Now, one of the things that he differs from Tiger in, though, is Tiger is a very cerebral golfer. Tiger, you know, was intense with his preparation. He micromanaged everything. He studied everything. Dustin doesn't exactly do that. Dustin's kind of a ball-go-far kind of guy. Okay, when it comes to, you know, the brains, Tiger had, you know, the stuff to go to Stanford. Dustin, on the other hand, isn't exactly a 100-watt bulb plugged in. And my favorite story being the time that he and AJ were standing on the 16th tee in a practice round at Doral, and Billy Horschel was playing with them. And AJ and DJ are arguing over the yardage book for a full 5 minutes. They're counting, they're pacing, they're adding, they're subtracting. They look like Tom Watson and his caddy trying to do the math right. Finally, after 5 minutes of arguing, DJ looks at Horschel and goes, bro, you want to hit? And Horschel says, yes. And he grabs his forehead and he lays up. And then the argument goes on for another 2 minutes. DJ grabs the driver, snarls something unintelligible, tees up the ball, drives the green. And as he's walking off with Horschel, goes, bro, AJ can't do basic math.
Yeah, it's a great story.
So now let's talk about one of the other young upcomers that has really made an impact this year and looks to be on a breakout for a major, and that's Justin Thomas. 3 wins this year.
Yeah, I like Justin Thomas, too. I was looking down the list of players, and he's one of those guys that this could be his year, too. One of the things that I love about the Masters, and it really doesn't happen as often in the other majors, but at the Masters you do have a tendency to get somebody who all of a sudden clicks in. And he's certainly more on the radar than some of the other players who've won the Masters in the last couple decades. But he's got the game. He's long enough. He's kind of brash enough to have the belief that he can go out and get a green jacket even at a young age and not that many trips around Augusta. And I mean, he's certainly somebody else to watch. And like I said, there's a bunch of these guys to me now. The landscape of the game to me has changed so much that I think there's a number of these guys who really have the game to win. It's just the pressure of Augusta and history weighing down on him on the back nine on Sunday that's going to differentiate who might walk away with it.
It was nice to see last year the emergence of Bryson DeChambeau and Smiley Kaufman, for example, two fine young players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. I even go a little further, and I look at somebody like, in terms of dark horses, I look at somebody like Kevin Kisner, who I like a lot. Now, he's not as long as a lot of these guys, but he's a member at Palmetto, which is one of the truly great golf courses that's near Augusta. It's got a lot of the same shapes and a lot of the same feel. He's a member there. He plays there all the time. He grew up in the area. He's, you know, I look at somebody like that, and those are the fun guys to me to watch. People who have that kind of, you know, the game, and it might be their time. You never know until it gets here, but it could be.
It's nice to see that joyous excitement on a young new face as he's going around playing a round of his life early in the tournament, you know, maybe posting a 67 and finding himself, you know, somewhere in contention come Sunday. But then, like you said, yes, as we all know, the Masters doesn't begin until the back nine on Sunday, and sometimes doesn't even sort itself out until the 17th or 18th. This is the 30th anniversary of one of those years. In 1987, as we all know, Larry Mize pitched in to beat Greg Norman. But there were eight different players that had a share of the lead at some point on the back nine that particular year. And this could be a year similar to that, that we're all bunched up. There's no clear favorite other than Dustin coming in. But that still leaves the door open for a lot of guys to be sort of, you know, bunched up like race cars as they come around turn two, you know, for the final stretch.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm hoping for. I think all of us are hoping for that, because that's when it – and what's great about this week is that the pressure builds every day. You start on Thursday. It's kind of cool. First round, it's first major. It's April. It's Azaleas. It's everything else. And then as the days wear on, and anybody who's ever been there, you can kind of feel the pressure of the rounds as they progress, getting to that point. And then when Sunday morning starts, and you have a sort of an idea of who might be in the mix, and then things start to turn very quickly. A ball in Rae's Creek, Rory's drive on 10 out of bounds left. All of a sudden, the tournament takes on a different feel, and like you said, that's when it gets really interesting. Those last 2 hours on Sunday are just there is nothing else like it in golf.
Well, the number one rule that you have to live by is driest ball usually wins.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. I like that one.
Okay. So you start there, but then the second one that you got to go for, and it's a double-edged sword, is you got to go out and make birdies. You can't sit back. Louis Westhuizen would be wearing a green jacket, but he let Bubba Watson catch him. You know, so you have to go out and attack the course. You must win the Masters. Okay, it's not a U.S. Open where it sometimes wins you. And that's the beauty of it being sort of a par 68, as you said. You know, really the par 5s are par 4.5. The greatest holes in golf are those half-par holes that draw you into the temptation for eagle, but exact a stiff penalty like a double bogey if you don't plan and execute the shot perfectly. That's why the Masters holds the freehold on excitement for major championships during the year.
Yeah, and I agree with that. If you look at some of the champions over the years, you look at Charles Schwartzel when he won, you know, birding the last four holes to win. You know, there's stories like that, and I think you're absolutely right. When you look back on it and you say these guys, other than their, you know, we talk about Greg Norman's collapse and Nick Faldo winning, but Faldo played an unbelievable round of golf. He did not wait for Greg Norman to back up. he went after it and he wound up winning. He got some help, but yeah, I think it's the combination of all those things, the dramatic stories of people falling apart and the great stories of people stepping into their moment and doing what they have to do.
Now, we're going to go to break in just a minute, but one last person that we haven't talked about yet, and somebody who my hunches are telling me that because he plays well there all the time, that he'll play well again this year and contend. I don't think we can rule Phil Mickelson out.
Yeah, and I think Mickelson is one of the, I think everybody in the golf world is hoping that he gets off to a good start and has a good couple rounds on Thursday and Friday. According to him, he's hitting his irons great. You know, the driver's always the issue, with Phil. He's got everything, and I think he's in a great position. He seems incredibly healthy and ready to go, and how cool would it be if Phil was in the mix on Sunday? I can't think of anything anybody would rather see than that.
I will say this, that all four major venues this year play in his favor in some way. Erin Hills being a new golf course, but also being, a faux links. That will play into Phil's favor because he's smart enough to be able to dissect it. Royal Birkdale loves Americans and is very friendly to Phil's kind of game. He can contend at Birkdale, and he plays very well at Quail Hollow. So I know a lot of my friends keep asking, is this the last hurrah for Phil? Is this the last hurrah for Phil? I keep telling them no.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, he's shown that he still has the ability to play at the highest levels. And the way you always tell is, where is Phil's short game? You know,
yep.
That's where kind of it starts to creep up, a shot here, a shot there that he may have pulled off before. But he's still mind-bogglingly sick when it comes to the short game. So.
We're going to be back right after these messages. You're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Radio Network. I'm Jay Flama, and we will be back in just a second.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Radio Network.